This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
Now is the time. And Iraq is the place in which the enemies of the civilized world are testing the will of the civilized world. We must not waver.
President Bush speaking at the White House Tuesday in prepared remarks and in a question and answer period with reporters. The president talked about these weeks of insurgent violence in Iraq. He also repeated U.S. plans to hand over power to Iraqis by June 30th. Dan Shore is off this week, so we're joined by our friend John Parker of The Economist magazine. John, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi.
U.S.-led forces in Iraq have had challenges on a number of fronts, obviously, this week. There's been the kidnapping of foreign nationals. An Italian hostage was murdered this week. A new Osama bin Laden tape has been heard, in which he offers what amounts to a swap, an end to al-Qaeda attacks in European countries that, if those countries withdraw troops from Muslim countries. This raises the question again about what incentive forces, multinational forces, would have to resist these pressures.
Well, I think even those who oppose the invasion of Iraq don't have an interest in Iraq going spectacularly wrong. And we're going into a period now where the UN is going to become more involved in the running of Iraq, mm-hmm. at least on a sort of transitional basis. So those people who think the UN is important and, you know, want to see it work have an interest in, you know, getting the UN to work properly in Iraq.
Well, let me ask about Iraqi reaction, because, of course, there was rather famously a bombing of UN headquarters in Iraq. Is the plan to turn it over to UN authority a kind of thing that might be politically appealing in the United States and Great Britain, certainly, at this moment, but may make little difference on the ground?
Yes, I must say it's not entirely clear to me why the UN should be massively better than a strongly American-flavored administration. After all, quite a large number of those people who've been kidnapped have been, you know, Japanese, Italians, mm-hmm. non-Americans, in other words. Most of there have been 40-plus foreign nationals, yeah. I think, who've been kidnapped. And I think the majority of them have not been American. So it's not clear that it would be massively better on the ground. On the other hand, it does seem like Jerry Bremer's sort of coalition has been widely seen in Iraq as being slightly out of touch. He sort of bypassed the Iraqi governing council in mm-hmm. appointing a new interior minister recently. So,
and they haven't been successful in restoring things like electricity, water services.
Exactly. So it is possible that that merely a change at the top will, a change of sink is better than a rest, as my mother used to say when she went on holiday.
Let's turn to an announcement also President Bush made this week about events in the Mideast, which I think Prime Minister Blair, at any rate, would see as connected. The president announced his support for the plans of Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon to withdraw unilaterally Israeli troops from Gaza. At the same time, he plans to keep for Israel some West Bank settlements. This does, by the way, seem to open a difference with Prime Minister Blair and his enunciated
true.
Policy that, in fact, policies in Iraq had to be related to a settlement of the Middle East.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Blair was always concerned that there should be like a two-pronged strategy, Iraq and the Middle East. He was very focused on it. It's definitely a shift in the U.S. position. The U.S. has in the past been slightly more even-handed and has not gone along with Israel's, you know, insistence that it should keep some of the settlements. On the other hand, it is one that U.S. presidents have in the past sort of accepted in different circumstances, so that in the 2000 negotiations, Yasser Arafat and Clinton accepted the idea that Israel wouldn't necessarily give up all its settlements, and everybody knows that the kind of other side of this, which was an unrestricted right of return for the Palestinians, couldn't actually take place without, well, as I said, unrestricted. There must be some return, but not, you mm-hmm. know, every single descendant of every single Palestinian refugee would have the right to come back to Israel. So
usually there was a price tag put on.
Exactly. I mean, I think there's sort of two things here with Bush's change of policy here. One that is surprising in a sense, which is mm-hmm. he's given up this American recognition, you know, without any quid pro quo back. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I mean, he has done that kind of thing in the past. And I was thinking, you know, there's a parallel with the Kyoto Treaty where he sort of said, we all know that there's a fact on the ground here. That in the Israeli case, it was the settlements. In the Kyoto case, it was the fact that America was never going to sign that treaty. And he was willing just to say, because of that fact on the ground, you know, I'm going to recognize it and we'll start from scratch from here.
Mm-hmm. Will the need to administrate Gaza perhaps change the nature of Palestinian opposition and the Palestinian Authority?
Yeah, that's an optimistic view. I mean, it does force Hamas, which is very powerful in there. It could force Hamas into the kind of responsibilities of administration. And I think it is that fear on Sharon's part, that if they were to withdraw from Gaza, there's a risk of kind of chaos. That means... He's afraid that he won't be able to get this sort of deal, you know, I withdraw from Gaza and keep the West Bank settlements, through his own party, and he's looking for American support to get that deal through.
Let me ask you to reflect on the continuing 9/11 Commission hearings. There was, of course, a talk this week that there'd have to be some kind of domestic intelligence agency that would be established to coordinate information. And also the question keeps getting raised, as opposed to a parliamentary system, why hasn't anyone resigned?
Yes, I'm puzzled about that too. I think there really is a cultural difference between America and Britain here. Voltaire said that that in Britain every so often they execute an admiral in order to encourage the others. Apparently, in America you don't execute you don't fire people to encourage the others. I am surprised.
I think actually they get executed more than they get fired.
During the Falklands War, Lord Carrington, who had absolutely nothing to do with it, resigned to take responsibility for the invasion. So, yes, it's sort of the difference here is you know, in America you have kind of, you know, never apologize, never explain. I also think that there's an additional feature here, which is, you know, the Bush administration has a very strong code of loyalty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the president remains loyal to a large number of these people and they to him. On the CIA, FBI intelligence failures, I do think we probably took a step towards reform of the intelligence services this week at the 9/11 hearings. There was an extremely damning report from the 9/11 Commission staff itself, which basically said, look, there's something fundamentally wrong with the sort of structure and the law enforcement mentality of the FBI. It doesn't fit properly with counterterrorism, and attempts to reform, sort of piecemeal little attempts to reform, have so far not worked, and nor has large amounts of money after 9/11 made any difference to that. And we had the Bush administration on record saying that they might well appoint a director of national intelligence. And that seems to me, it's not quite the British model under which all domestic intelligence is under one single agency. As Louis Free and others said at the 9/11 Commission, this may be like a step too far for America. But I do think that there's, we definitely took a step towards some, perhaps not quite so radical reform, but a reform.
John, thanks very much. John Parker of The Economist magazine.